Listener, here's how this works. We will give you John the Baptist steak knives. These are high-quality steak knives. You'll never have trouble cutting a steak again. Here's how this works. You send me... There we go.
Welcome to the Faith, Finances, and F-Bombs podcast. Manage your money, find your soul, and cover your ears.
So I have here...
Do you have there?
I have some packets. These are Hellman's mayonnaise packets. Okay. These little...
Do I need to ask why?
So, listener, the reason I brought this in, and watch it backfire on me, I cannot get the thing to open. There are many catering situations in which these Hellman's packets are... provided to have as mayonnaise. And the reason I have them here is because this is somewhat of an F-bomb for me, because for quite some time, I have not been able to open these packages. They are incredibly difficult to open. And I would not use that as an impetus. I would not use my struggle alone, because then it would just be a singular, it would just be my F-bomb. And I would say, this makes me so angry that I cannot open these, but I have been at a table at an event. I can't open them. Someone else can't open it. Someone else can't open it. And that's frustrating to me.
Well, I'm not going to try because I don't want to make a mess.
Well, you're not going to be able to make a mess. You're not going to get the thing open.
Oh, I can open this.
With your hands, I need to specifically say.
I can open this with my hands. You want me to do it on air?
Yeah, try it.
All right. It's open.
Yeah, see, I knew it would backfire on me. I can't. No matter how hard I try. Oh, I just did.
Oh, you can.
I just did.
You have to have the right mindset, Hartley.
I should have tested that before I brought it out.
That's what makes our podcast unique.
It does not change. It does not change, though, my frustration that Hellman's had packs that could not be opened. No. Okay. So my son told me this because he was with me on Friday night and we went to an event on Saturday together and they had these as well. He was at both events with me. He grabbed one and he said, Dad, these are different. You can probably open these. So I guess we need to cut that whole thing out because
No, we will applaud Unilever's willingness to advance their technology and make it easier to open. What I was impressed by is on the package, it says made with 100% cage-free eggs.
We should begin by reporting to the listener that the ice cream machine at McDonald's was indeed working when we went after our episode.
And we both consumed some dairy
product. And we both consumed some dairy product. But it's important to note that currently, right now, 14% of ice cream machines in McDonald's in the United States are down.
Yeah, and I'll tag on that because I told you this in person. If you guys haven't looked at the show notes and clicked on the link for the video that Hartley embedded in there, it will take about a half hour. But if you've got some time... watch that video. It was awesome. And I did not realize that someone had dedicated so much time to try to explain why are all the machines broken.
Johnny Harris, it was an in-depth investigation.
It was great.
And I think it took him a couple of years
to put that
together.
Yeah.
It actually does solve the mystery.
Yeah.
It does confirm that the things are really not broken down, or they might be, but... there's nothing really that can be done about it. I shouldn't even say it that way because that alludes to the fact that it might even legitimately be broken.
Yeah. Well, if they watch the video, they'll know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But in the bottom line, some of the franchisees are very upset about it.
Right.
Because they have no power because it's a national contract.
Yeah. McDonald's Corporation isn't paying anything for
it. No. So what a messed up situation.
Listener, do take a look at that if you've got half an hour to kill. And clearly you do because you listen to this podcast. If you have an additional hour to kill, it's a half an hour to kill at some point, you might be interested in hearing just how deep and how, what would be the word? You could call it a conspiracy. I think Johnny kind of refers to it, but how Machiavellian and how old school companies covering each other's.
It was fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating. What was most fascinating to me is that there is a solution that's an easy solution, and McDonald's is fighting that. It goes deep. This is deeper and bigger than the hot coffee burn lawsuit. What other lawsuits has McDonald's been involved in? That was one, right? With the guy burned himself on coffee.
It was a lady. She put the cup between her legs when she pulled out of the drive-thru.
and it burned her.
Compressed the cup, it popped out and burned her legs.
Thighs specifically.
Yeah.
They kind of covered that on Seinfeld.
You know, I was thinking about Seinfeld this morning. Courtney asked me if I was aware of the new fashion trend where women are wearing like leather underwear as their garment.
That's the first I've heard of it. Well, and are they Mormon or not Mormon? Mormons have holy undergarments. That's what I want. That's why I'm alluding to that. They're not. It's not leather.
Didn't inquire.
Yeah.
But I was like, well, I read an article about micro shorts. She goes, no, it's not even that. This is what they're wearing. It's underwear that they wear as their outer garment, but it's leather. I'm like, huh. I said, so Seinfeld was all over it 40 years ago.
Right. With the bra.
Bra's a top.
It was Elaine's nemesis slash good friend.
Yes. She was the heiress to the
character's name. I'm trying to think of the character's name. Sue Ellen Mischke.
That's right.
Sue Ellen Mischke.
Candy bar heiress. Yeah.
Here's an interesting thing about Seinfeld. Let me just say two or three things, and I think this is applicable because I think it's very possible that any listener has seen Seinfeld and might watch on a regular basis or at least stream. At one point, I watched a late night with David Letterman, and then later when he moved to CBS, it was Late Show with David Letterman. But he was in an interview with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and this was pretty early. It was like in its second or third
year. It was just starting to hit their stride.
It was pretty earlier. It might have been 4 years in, but he says to her, because they talk about Seinfeld for just a moment, and he says when he's talking about the show and commenting to her, he makes a statement that that show is like I Love Lucy. It's going to be on forever, and people are going to see it for generations after generations. I just remember in the context of that, saying that at that year, that my response was, that's absurd. You know, because, you know, I'm watching it. Nothing. Yeah, I'm watching it unfold. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, this is a great show. And what makes it great is two or three things. Number one, it breaks all kinds of molds. It's something that's not done. It's very difficult to do. They happen to find a good formula that people responded to well. And you're watching it unfold. It's happening in my lifetime. But I'm not thinking this thing is going to go on forever. And it's going to be like I Love Lucy. But David Letterman knew that. He felt that and knew that and said that at the time. And it's turned out to be true. So you just mentioned that with the Sue Ellen Mischke storyline, which recurred, I think, in a total of like three episodes. Yeah. Sue Ellen was actually on four because there's when she married Pinter in India.
Right.
Which was the reverse episode. Right. We should take one of our episodes and put it in reverse.
You and the editor can work on that.
Yeah, so with that storyline, you mentioned, okay, it was ahead of its time, but here's what's interesting to me, and I'm not sure that a lot of people, well, I'm sure a lot of people, I shouldn't say that. Many people are fully aware of this, but probably undercredit how many things we have in our existing world, especially in this Western world, thanks to Seinfeld. One case in point would be the ketchup squeeze bottle. George and Jerry are walking down the street and they're talking about ketchup. And he says, you know, they should put that in a squeeze bottle. Then later ketchup came out in a squeeze bottle. So, and there are many other things. Of course, there are phrases in culture.
Oh my.
Yada, yada, yada being one of them.
Yeah,
I'm sure there is. But so anyway, that part of culture and that is not uncommon. That happens with a very popular comedy series and sometimes dramatic series. At one point, I want to say around 99, 2000, 2001, there was a podcast that I caught portions of an episode or two talking about how Seinfeld was influential to culture and made actual, what would you call these? I guess sociological stamps onto culture, and culture shifted as a result of things that happened on Seinfeld. That was something my brother listened to actually. And I can't refer it. I can't look it up because I have no idea what it was called.
It's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
So this is changing from one entertainment medium to another. Temptations, Ball of Confusion. I don't know if you're familiar with that song. It came out around 1970. It's amazing how little has changed in 55 years. So I'm probably going to throw some of those lyrics on my whiteboard at school because I've already done some Bob Seger lyrics about Feel Like a Number and how we as human beings are just numbers and so much of our daily aspects of life. That song was released in the 70s. I would suggest that we are even more inclined now to feel overlooked. This was a similar experience like some of the things they talk about in their lyrics that we seem to have made no progress on in 55 years. Mm. That's all I got on that.
Well, Ecclesiastes 3 does talk about how there's nothing new under the sun, and what has been will be again. And so I think things are very cyclic, but the evolution of, I hesitate to say evolution in a faith-based setting, but the evolution of man's progression, maybe I should say the progressiveness, as we progress as a society and things take on new forms, in some ways we do not change. I think isolation and being overlooked and everything is just a product of our cultural age where...
Yeah, and for all we know, people technological felt this way age. 2,000 years ago.
Yeah. We've talked about taking up prayer, and I want to talk about how to begin to pray for a listener who may be saying, yes, I would like to take up prayer, or I am taking up prayer, but I do not know how to pray. Even among people of faith who have had a faith journey and might have been a Christian for a long, long period of time, we'll commonly talk about the intimidation of prayer and the overwhelming concept of praying and just the frustration that it causes. And I think it's certainly understandable because prayer is a supernatural activity. What I would say, and what many people do say, the best way to pray is just talk as if you would talk to someone else. Prayer is just really communicating with God. It's talking with God. It really is that simple. And because you do not, you are only employing basically one sense. You can't really use your sight. The smell is used in some traditions in the Catholic faith when they burn incense. That has to do with prayer.
Right.
So they employ the sense of smell, and that's probably one reason why they do that. And so it's very limited. And I think that is part of why it has been. But being a supernatural activity, you're talking with God who does have a personality, does have qualities you can understand, does have qualities you can relate to, but you cannot expect anything in return. You're not going to hear anything audibly the way that you can a friend. It's not the idea that he's much bigger than that and he's more incredible than that. It is that, but then it's beyond that because it's a supernatural thing. So here again, as has been the case, we talk about the mystery. So even if talking with other people comes naturally to you, listener, it's understandable if talking with God feels like a steep learning curve. And to that, I will say that the disciples, those 12 men that God in the person of Jesus chose to journey with them and do ministry with them so that his word and his message and he could be known among all people, did not have very many questions to ask him. I should point out too, because I don't know if many people would be aware of this, but each and every one of the disciples, regardless of the trade from which Jesus called them, they had tried and failed to become rabbis. In that culture, if you were Jewish, every Jewish child would go to a synagogue school. All of the boys would have been put into rabbinical school, taught by rabbis through this rabbinical training. So there were three different levels. So the first level, everybody was put through. If they graduated, they moved on. If they didn't, they were told, now go and take up the trade of your father. And it was clear if someone just didn't have that calling or didn't have that inclination, it would be very clear and they would be eliminated. So they would go to the professions of their fathers. You had to get through three levels until you got to the point where you could become a rabbi. Each of these disciples had been through this training and had gotten to that level where they were told, now go and take up the trade of your father. They were kind of feeling like they had failed. So that gives you an insight into how it was much more of a special thing that Jesus had called them to this ministry. But because they had so much Jewish training and teaching, and now having shared that, if that's the first time you've learned of that, if you are in a setting in which the Bible is read or you're reading the Bible yourself and you're in the Gospels and you're reading about Jesus interacting with the disciples, and it seems as though they are struggling with something that's of a Jewish culture, you would understand that they've got the rabbinical side of it too. They've been taught it. They just didn't pass all the tests with flying colors. They knew it well enough to be able to succeed as a leader in the church, but not to be a rabbi. If you track what's recorded in Scripture, there's only really a couple of questions they ask, and one of those two questions that they ask was, Jesus, teach us how to pray. And as a result of that, we have the Lord's Prayer. I think I've broken down the Lord's Prayer in another episode, I believe. I will check with Julia, our content manager, and she can tell me when and where I covered that, if I did. And if not, I'll come back and talk about the Lord's Prayer.
I didn't know the whole thing about the rabbinical training and the different levels, so that was something new. I don't know what I'll do with that information, but at least I know it now.
Here's one thing that you can do with it is you can think about the careful planning and love.
Yay!
Think about God's desire to have relationship with people.
Oh, yeah!
That's the whole, that's one thing that we talk about here.
Right.
That he desires to know us. We desire to know and be known. We are born with this kind of hole in our heart that we seek everything in the world to fill it. And that's what gets us screwed up. But it's a hole that only God can fill. And it's that need to be in relationship with him. And that's why you would hear, you probably don't hear it much on this program, but you might hear of people of faith just talk about how they never really felt a fulfillment or satisfaction until they developed a relationship with God. And that's why God in the person of Jesus said, I have not only come that man may have life, but have it more abundantly. So that's God in the person of Jesus saying, the fall of man happened. There was deception. Sin came in. Corruption came in. This sin and corruption is happening everywhere. Jesus is the way that bridges that gap and to have it more fulfilling. So one thing that you can do with it is that you think about how the nature of God is so desirous of relationship that he took these men who could become great things. And some of these disciples really had it in their hearts to become rabbis. And they failed, and he took them in and gave them that second chance. If you say, okay, God really doesn't, because God knows the things I've done in my life, I cannot believe he would give me an opportunity to redeem that in any way. And you have the disciples that he redeemed with that. So yeah, that's very insightful. When you know that, you kind of appreciate those disciples more. And then here's another thing that this was certainly true in my life. I think I was well into my 30s before it really dawned on me that the disciples were much younger than I thought they were. That concept is...
So what age are we talking about as a range for these guys? Are they late teens, early 20s?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. But see, I thought... And again, I think I was well in my 30s, and I was thinking that these guys are like, you know, low 30s.
Yeah.
Because Jesus because
age.
Jesus, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought these guys were near Jesus' age.
Yeah.
And at that point, I realized, wait a minute, these were like kids. No one, and at that point I said, no wonder they did not get it. No one was really understanding what Jesus was saying. When God in the person of Jesus was saying, the temple's going to be destroyed, I'm going to rise it again in 3 days.
Right.
Some of it is metaphorical, some of it is allegory. All of it was very spiritual. And so
all of it counterintuitive to the faith that they grew up
to with. The faith and the culture that they grew up, the right. faith culture
yes.
that they grew up with.
Yeah.
But simply prayer is communicating with God. And so if you are taking up prayer and you're saying, I really don't know how to do this, that would be the first phrase that you need to know. It's just really communicating with God. That can mean thanking him. It can mean praising him. It could be confessing something you've done wrong or expressing a need that you have. It can mean talking to him as you would to a friend. And I would say that learning to pray is really about developing a relationship with God. Relationships are built on moments of connection and communication, but how can I do that with the God of the universe? That's where I think your faith has to come in, that you have to believe there is a God to begin with.
I would think so.
To pray.
So otherwise, you're just talking to yourself.
When you do spend time talking to yourself, I would say that God is there with you and God is a part of that conversation. It's just being one-sided. I wish I could be better at doing this constantly all the time. But it really helps me to think of God and prayer and conversation with God as a constant stream of consciousness. Just as I'm picking up a pack of mayonnaise and really struggling not to curse because I can't get that package open, God is a part of that consciousness thought in that. And so that has helped me to develop that relationship a little more because I know he's there talking about that. And I could certainly go in why you should pray, how do you pray, what should you pray for? But that would be our second series on our Faith, Finances, and F-Bombs lecture series.
For a small
our
fee.
Our faith seminars. Listener.
We're going to provide you a meal with mayonnaise packets.
Listener, here's how this works. We will give you John the Baptist steak knives. These are high-quality steak knives. You'll never have trouble cutting a steak again. Here's how this works. You send me.
That's right.
There we go.
Oh, by the way, we are on another record high pace, if I remember my notes correctly. We currently have 18, and today will be 19.
Well, we are currently at my bid, my guess, and we're passing it.
Yeah, you're going to be out.
On March 21st.
Yeah. All of a sudden, 66 doesn't seem improbable.
No, it doesn't. If we're at 18 or 19.
Yeah. But
I'm sure it will slow.
It will. I don't know what the catalyst will be, but the Fed testimony yesterday was favorable for the markets. Very favorable testimony from Powell. They are now suggesting there will be 3 rate cuts in 2024 and possibly 3 in 2025. Still waiting for the data, which I've said every single time. I'm fine with that. But some of the Wall Street traders are now anticipating a possible rate cut in June, which would seem a little early to me.
That seems early.
I'm still thinking after July 1st, third quarter, so we'll probably see the first one, but I've been pretty steadfast in that for a long time, so I'm not changing my mind just based on some speculation from Wall Street traders. I'll tell you something else that I saw this morning. I shared the headline with Courtney, and maybe our listeners would appreciate this. The Federal Reserve is broken into different districts, right? Missouri, we have 2 Federal Reserve banks. We're the only state that has 2. I think we've shared that before about how great our state is. So the Philadelphia Fed Index showed continued expansion in the economy. Remember, we talk about this all the time. Everyone keeps saying we're going to have a recession, we're going to have a recession, but GDP keeps growing. So I said to her, oh, and the same headline, along with that headline came one that said first-time unemployment rates fell, which is probably good for the labor markets, take some of the heat off labor. So anyway, 2 positive announcements about the economy. And I did explain to her, just because the Philadelphia area economy is expanding, that doesn't extrapolate out to the entire country. So if anybody's wondering, well, how can we be headed for a recession if we are indeed headed for a recession when that index said that the economy is growing? That is just for their particular region and nothing else. So their region could be growing and the Southwest could be contracting. Mm-hmm. The Midwest could be contracting, the Northwest, et cetera. So listener, if you ever wondered how can one positive news not translate to our national scope, that's how, because it's just tracking data in that region. But I took that as a positive sign. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I really don't have anything else financial. We're setting records. GDP is growing. Unemployment's fine. Inflation's still stubbornly high. The Fed is waiting to see what happens. The consensus in the talking heads essentially is they're better off waiting to cut rates than to be too early and have to reverse track later. And I did see an article this morning that referred to a Federal Reserve chairman, I can't remember his name now, I think it was something like Burr, in the 70s that made that mistake. Cut rates too soon, inflation came back heavily, and then he tried to get it back under control by raising rates, and it was too late. The cat was out of the bag, so to speak. And,
right.
So my guess is they're looking at history and going, well, we don't want to make that mistake again.
There has been a thought. I have thought before, and Kevin is now thinking we should have some t-shirts.
Yes.
And so I'm thinking, you know, we're approaching our 50th episode. Ooh. It doesn't cost anything to be able to listen to our program, and we have very limited memberships in which you pay for exclusive content.
That's right.
So Kevin and I are going to give this some thought, and maybe for our 50th episode, not that that's anything to commemorate. Really?
I don't know.
Our listener base is growing. We are now at 8 listeners, I believe. And so if you and I growth. If you and I were to have a t-shirt and we give one and we provide one for listeners, or if they purchase one, this not would not be a thing like a televangelist who's saying for John the Baptist steak knives, you know, you send us $10, but for a contribution to buy that t-shirt, it would help defray the cost of producing and publishing the podcast. And it would be a great way to promote our podcast because I'm kind of thinking if someone walks around with Faith, Finances, and F-bombs, that there's got to be one person out of 100 that they see that someone might say, what in the world is that?
What is
that? And then you can tell them about it. So we'll give that some thought. Maybe we'll have those. Certainly a great idea. But let me throw in this story since we've been focusing on prayer the last few episodes. I happened to think about this morning. I tried to think back on what were my first experiences as I was learning to pray. And I couldn't really think of anything, but I did have a memory of hanging out with a friend in the summertime, and then it was time to eat the evening meal with his family. So we were called in from outside and we came and sat down. And at this time, and you probably experienced this too, you're a few years older than I am, but you are well aware of this era.
I was a free range child.
In our history, CB radios had existed for some time, but this was like a fad. It was, I don't know if that was a result of some of things that were happening in cinema, like Smokey and the Bandit or Convoy or the song of C.W. McCall. You know, I don't know where all of that originated, but there was a fad and a phenomenon to the extent that my dad bought a CB radio to He bought a CB radio to install in his Datsun 710.
Ours was in the house. It was a base unit.
Yeah, so my dad had one in his car. So this is how big of a phenomenon.
I don't remember about the car. We definitely had a base unit in the house.
Yeah, and I had other friends whose family had a CB. And, you know, my dad would turn the thing on and listen to it as you're going down the road like we're in an 18-wheeler.
Yeah.
Talk about a surreal experience.
Yeah.
I get 25. I learned how to drive semis. I'm listening to CB radios because it's part of what I'm doing. But anyway, this was a big popular thing. So we get called in to, I'm at my friend's house. We get called in for dinner. We sit down. The dad calls on my friend to say the prayer. He starts out and says, "Dear God, we thank you, good buddy, for that." Dad interrupts and says, "No, reprimands him saying that. Good buddy is a terminology from CB for those of you who do know. And so reset. So he resets, starts the prayer, says, "Breaker, breaker to God."
That's what I wondered. He was going to go breaker,
so
breaker.
He starts breaker, breaker to God. Dad gets really upset. So does the mom. You know, the siblings are laughing. Yeah. So now it's very disruptive. So he really gets reprimanded. He gets really stern with him now. I know my friend. He and I were kind of similar. I thought, you know, he should take a third crack at it. I wondered if he would. So he goes into his third prayer, and it's a legitimate prayer. He's praying for the food. You know, when I would pray at that age, I would put my hands over my eyes like I was praying, and then I would hold open my fingers and peek, and I would say, "Thank you for the butter. Thank you for the..." And I would just look at everything on the table and say, "Thank you for these things."
"For the mayonnaise packet."
So anyway, he's going through the legitimate prayer, and I'm thinking, oh, well, it's a good prayer. And he gets to the end of the prayer, and right when I think he's about to say amen, he says, 10-4. His dad loses it.
I bet.
Yeah. That loses it. So on that note, we should say goodbye. Now we have a full and complete satisfying episode.
Breaker.
All right. Thanks for joining us, everyone. And we appreciate you listening, and have a great weekend.